Hello and welcome to the Independent Farmer Podcast, the go-to podcast for do-it-yourself farmers who are taking control of their own business, skipping the middleman, and selling direct to local consumer and wholesale buyers. This podcast is hosted by Barn to Door, the number one business tool for independent farmers to manage their business, promote their brand, and sell online and in person. Let's dive in to today's Independent Farmer Podcast. Welcome to the Independent Farmer Podcast. I'm Janelle, CEO of Barn to Door, and your host for today's episode. As many of our listeners may be aware, Barn to Door offers an all-in-one business solution for farmers selling direct, online, and in person. In today's conversation, we'll get into the transition into farming and how this newer farm has found success. Today, I'm happy to welcome back Rachel Schenck of Schenck Family Farm in North Carolina. Rachel is part of our Farm Advisor Network and has worked with us for almost 4 years now. And since becoming an advisor last year, she shared advice with farmers across the country looking to grow their business. I'm excited to talk to Rachel about the process of starting a new farm with her husband, Joe, the hardships and what she would tell herself looking back on the past couple of years since starting the farm in 2017. We always love the retrospective, don't we? Well, welcome, Rachel.
Oh, yeah. It's easy to get in the weeds, but it's good to reflect.
It is. It's good to pull back and be like, what have I learned? What would I do different? And all those things. And of course, all the best advice is that retrospective hindsight, I think.
For sure.
That's good. Well, just so the listeners are aware, can you please share with us, tell us about your farm? We said it was North Carolina. So beyond that, just give us a good sense of your farm, what you do farm, the size of your farm, who you generally serve as customers, and we can take it from there.
Yeah, totally. Thanks so much for having us, Janelle. So like you said, yeah, we're in Eastern North Carolina. So we're just about half an hour from the beach.
Okay.
And we're a pasture-based livestock farm, which has been interesting because land here is getting bought up for developments because we're so close to the beach. We were able to find about 50 acres to lease from. It's actually his grandpa's land. He farmed it. And so he wanted to keep it for farming. And so we were lucky enough to be able to lease it long term. So
that's awesome. I'm so happy to hear that. The land grab is real. So I appreciate
it
that.
It is. The struggle was, took us a couple years to find it. But yeah, so we do chicken, pork, we do beef from a partner farm, but we are going to have our own beef next year. We do Thanksgiving turkeys, fresh eggs, and various products made with our lard. So some soaps, balms, candles. And my husband manages the day-to-day at the farm. So he cares for the animals, the land, and I'm mostly responsible, well, for the kids, but then also the sales and marketing side of the business. So we got Mason, he's 6. We just started homeschooling this year. And Daisy, she's 2. And we really started the farm for them. They weren't born yet when we started thinking about the farm, but it was back in 2016. We've been married about 4 years. We started to consider what raising a family would look like, how we wanted to raise a family. And my husband, Joe, just felt really strongly. He didn't want to work full time away from home. He grew up on his uncle's farm and some other farms. He loved the lifestyle, being outside, doing hard, purposeful work, getting to feed people. So we kind of started just on a super small scale in our backyard. We were on half an acre. But yeah, we really just wanted something that we could bring our kids alongside us to do, to work together as a family, providing food for people. We had no idea in the beginning that it would become a whole business, but that's how it started. We had 40 meat birds and 5 laying hens in the backyard. We gave it away to friends and family. They were like, this is amazing. Y'all should start a business. And we were like, that's terrifying. So it took us a few years, but we started. So that was in the fall of 2016.
Of 2016. Okay. That was the fall of 2016.
And then in the winter of 2017, the beginning of that year is when we established it as a business.
Okay. So that's not too much time later. Like you did it because lifestyle, how you wanted to raise your kids as a family.
Yes.
But at that time you were just like, we just want this experience. You weren't thinking business.
Yes. Yep.
Oh, interesting. And so then you're like, wait a minute, we could do this. Did you both work off farm, like off farm jobs?
Yep. So my husband did construction and then I worked at our church office doing administrative stuff, just anything and everything. So I was only about 30 hours a week and he was regular full-time, like 40 hours a week. So we were just doing it on the side. And then right after we established the business, I found out I was pregnant with our first kiddo, Mason. And I knew that once he was born, I didn't want to keep working And so yeah, it kind of worked out perfect that I could kind of step back from my job there and focus on the farm.
Well, honestly, that's a myth. When you have kids, you work more. You're just not paid for it.
You're just not paid for it.
Like, it's 24/7. It's worth every minute of it. Yeah.
Oh, it is. It's been such a joy. So our farm has always been on leased land away from our home. And so I remember taking him in the car seat to do like farm chores when Joe was still at work, and he just tagged along for the ride. It was a lot easier before he started walking.
Yes, I definitely can see how that would be true. And yet, fortunately, out on a farm can be a great place once they do start walking, frankly.
Oh, for sure.
That is fantastic. So when Mason was born, were you then really, quote unquote, full-time farming? And so, of course, full-time parenting?
Yes. So I was, but my husband continued to work until 2020. So we just did chicken and eggs for the first three years. We doubled production every year. And then 2020, COVID happened. We started working with y'all because we needed an online store presence. That's when my husband was able to step away from construction. So we were both full on farm. We also added pastured pork that year too. So that was perfect timing with the COVID stuff. And that's when we really started to lean into subscriptions, which Barn to Door was instrumental for. Subscriptions has always been kind of the backbone. So when we started, literally, we would just people, how many chickens do you want per month? How many eggs? And that was our subscription. But yeah. And then in 2021, we started partnering with a local grass-fed beef farm because we knew we wanted to raise our own beef, but that was a huge undertaking that we weren't ready for.
So, yeah. Good. You're kind of learning with somebody else, like right in front of you before you take it on yourself, I suspect.
Yeah. So we learned a lot from him and from some other farmers. We had someone else tell us, another farmer, that was like, if you can get a product that's ready to sell and learn how to market it, that it will be a way to ease into a new enterprise instead of all of a sudden you're like managing the animals and managing the marketing and the sales like all at once. So that was really, really good advice that served our business.
I'm writing that down because we're going to repeat that one at the end. That one's just too good. And now people are like, what did you just say? You have to wait till the end to hear it again. Okay. So I love that you actually layered. Now I'm really pushing on the puns, aren't I? Layered in, obviously starting with chicken layers for all the people who didn't catch that maybe not obvious pun. So you started with the chickens and the eggs.
Yes.
And you started it as a hobby and you're like, wow, this works. People like it. And then a couple of years later, you really started pork at the same time your husband was coming full time to the farm. Okay. And then now we're talking 2-3 years later, you're thinking it's almost time to add the beef. I would suspect you might do it that way again instead of all at once. Or what would you change anything about how you added in products at all? This is the advice moment for you on anybody thinking about these things.
I would not change that. I think that our growth was very sustainable. Like, we definitely had our points of overwhelm and burnout and all those things, but it was never to the point where we're like, we're quitting the farm. Because we see a lot of farms do that. Like, they go all in, all at once, and then they're trying to manage like 10 different enterprises. And obviously, when you're starting something new, it takes a while to work out the kinks. And so it's easy to get overwhelmed fast. So it was really nice to start small and get really good at something before we added something new.
Yeah.
I know that's not everyone's story, but for us, I would not change that at all.
Honestly, it might not be everyone's story, but I've heard that overwhelmingly from farmers that we've talked to and I talked to about starting a farm and even expanding a farm, really. But it is get good at something or get good at as much as you can handle first before, because the learning curve takes more time and mistakes and learning. But once you get it down and it's like routine to do, you've got some experience under your belt, you have to maybe think about it a little less. It's sort of like learning to make bread from scratch. But once you've done it enough times, you know, at that point, it's almost just therapeutic. You just know how to do those things. It's not always like that. You have to learn at the front end.
I don't think I realized the learning curve was so high. And we never said, we never had a perfect plan. Like, okay, we're going to do this enterprise for this many years. And, you know, it just kind of, that's the way it worked out. We didn't realize the learning curve, not only for raising the animals, but also like marketing everything. Like, that was a whole nother thing that like we didn't really consider when we first started.
Yeah, it's fun when things go right. Like, that really went right for you in terms of getting good at something, adding more, getting good at something, adding more. And you ended up, probably thanks to Mason, you ended up starting like you're full-time first, and then eventually your husband was able to join you at the right time. That sounds like a lot went right.
Yes.
So on the other side of it, what went wrong?
Yeah. So many things.
That's not even fair. That's too big of a question. Let me back up.
I mean, I have a good answer.
Okay. Let's start with your good answer.
That came to mind. So yeah, like, because marketing was just not even on our radar, like so many people tell us like, oh my gosh, your stuff is just gonna, it's gonna sell itself. Just show up to the farmers market, bring everything you have, you'll sell out. So we took their advice and we showed up to the farmers market with 80 fresh whole chickens and we sold two.
Oh no. You're probably making a lot of people feel really good right now. Like, okay. They've made it their legitimate farm as a business, and they started with selling 2 of 80. Okay, we can do this too.
Like, I forgot a price sign. We weren't on social media. We didn't have an email list. I think the only people that knew we were going to be there were like two friends and my mom and dad. We were naive. We didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah. So you're sort of saying if you just show up, that's probably not enough. You actually have to do the exercise of marketing. And sure. If you were to identify, I would say 3 or 4 sort of top things you would recommend. If you're going to do marketing, here's what you need to do. What would those 3 or 4 things be?
Yeah. So you mean like before you're actually ready to sell the product as you're preparing for that?
I will take both answers.
I think like the moment we got the baby chicks, I would have started a social media page, been sharing about that, sharing about our farm journey, building an email list, maybe going to local CrossFit gyms to share about our farm and share what we will have eventually, just like starting to build those relationships, getting the word out. Yeah, definitely email list, because I didn't feel like it was necessary, because I'm like, I don't have anything to sell.
Right.
Even just like if it was once a month, just to say, here's where we are for the farm. Here's what we're working on this week. Here's what we're excited for in the months ahead. This is when we think we'll have chicken available, and just kind of bringing people into the farm journey before we had anything. I think that would have been huge. And I think maybe we would have sold out our first farmer's market. I don't know. But
maybe you would have. I love that. It's not like you can just show up and say, we're ready.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, what? Or they forgot to show up because they didn't know. So you're saying, hey, I'm going to tell you a lot of times ahead of time, like, we just got the chicks. The chicks are growing. Look at these beautiful eggs. Or maybe you have meat birds too, etc. But you're sort of giving them multiple reminders well in advance. That's really a good idea.
Yeah. I think that would have helped.
And then email list, you said. That was a big one. You said social media and email list. Is there anything else?
I think those are the big things. Yeah. At least we're in like a small town, and I think the in-person word of mouth is huge as well. So going to like a homeschool co-op or a CrossFit gym, somewhere where our ideal customer would be, even if they weren't there, like they at least would know about us, and then they could share with their friends that they might think would be interested. Because I think in-person, at least in our area, goes a long way. Because also with meat, I think with produce, you get to display your beautiful produce and people look at it and they're like, it's beautiful. Yes, I want that. But with meat, I feel like people need to know you because
meat's not pretty.
And meat's not pretty. It's in like a cooler and it's frozen and it's not like beautiful to look at. So we really had to build that trust with people before they were ready to spend $30 on a chicken. So
yeah, no, I appreciate that. Yes. So relationship building, that's a big one. And social media, email, and in person are sort of the trifecta, it sounds like, to get that done. How often do you email? I'm just always curious because I'm hearing trends on this one.
So in the beginning, just once a month, maybe. But now we try and do at least once a week. And I try and do 75% of those strictly relationship building. So like sharing recipes, sharing farm stories, sharing education. Yep. What do all the egg labels at the store mean? Those kinds of things that our customers would be interested in. And I always have a link to the online store and I always have our schedule. But I try not to just send emails like that are salesy, because I feel like those are easy for people to just delete and not read.
Yeah.
We're once a week has been our sweet spot because we're year round. Most of our products
are year
round and we sell every week. And so
amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay. That is very helpful. I appreciate that. The other thing is, as you mentioned in person, a lot of farmers probably would think, oh, in person, it's a farmer's market. But you mentioned, I think, a CrossFit gym and a homeschool co-op, which are probably great ideas. So if I'm a farmer listening to this, thinking about getting started, ideally, there's small towns near most farmers, frankly. If they were to do that, are they going to call them? Are they going to email? Are they using them as a pickup location? Or are they doing a prezo or putting up flyers? How do you go about doing that if you're a new farmer?
Yeah, I think every farmer has their sweet spot, their way of doing things. What worked for us is I would either go in person or do a phone call and just say, hey, we'd love to share about our farm, whether you'd be interested in being a pickup location or not. We think that our farm could serve your people well. We'd love to give you product for your family to share and enjoy for free.
Oh, that's nice.
And then, yeah, we'd love to just be able to share with your people for like 10 minutes during your CrossFit open gym or whatever, you know? And that was great to just start. We never used them as a pickup location. It just didn't work out, like with the frozen meat.
Yeah.
Weren't coming to the gym every day. But we had a pickup that was like 2 minutes from their gym. And so it was perfect. And we could say, hey, we deliver every month or every week on this day at this time to this location.
Yeah.
And yeah, try to make it really easy and convenient for people. So we still don't offer home delivery. That's something that we are considering doing in the future, but we have been able to sell everything we need to doing just pickup locations, farmers markets. So we haven't added that yet, but I think that that could be another huge thing. I mean, our farm is not in the middle of nowhere. We're like 20 minutes from a couple, like
lovely.
I mean, not big towns, but bigger
there's
than the town we're in.
Enough people that you need.
But if you're in the middle of nowhere, I think home delivery would be, I mean, people love that convenience for sure.
Yeah. And it's more efficient than people realize sometimes, honestly. We have some farmers that are just like boom, boom, boom. And it goes pretty quick because they're focused geographically. So your pickup locations are always a farmer market, or is it some other locations as well? Do you have other partner businesses?
Yes. So we do pickups at farmers markets, and then we have a mobile farm store. So we got a grant for a trailer that we have chest freezers in. We set that up during the week at two different, same day, same time.
So it's almost like a meetup pickup.
Yes. And it's
no pun intended. That's another pun.
Meetup. So people can shop in person, or that's like a pickup location. We just set it up for 2 hours.
Fabulous.
We have a local shop that we partner with. Every Thursday at 5, we deliver orders to them, and people pick up just from us in the parking lot. We don't take it into the store or anything. And then we have a self-serve freezer at our home. So in our garage, we have it set up that it's labeled by their name. The eggs are in the bottom, and they can just come at their convenience on a few days a week and pick up. That's actually our most popular one, just because people's lives are crazy. And we are kind of in the middle of lots of people's commutes to and from work.
Traffic pattern. Love it. Yes. If they can make that part of their routine, that's a big deal.
Yeah,
that's fabulous.
I used to man those hours, but then like you'd talk to someone for half an hour and it's like, I've got to go make dinner and do other farm things. And so we're like, okay, I can't have a relationship in person with every single customer. Like, we've got to streamline this with our email list. And yes, I'm going to do in-person stuff, but I didn't have the capacity to stop and talk with every single person picking up.
I know. That's so sweet. No, that's good. You even have to streamline and consolidate the relationship building, which is fair when you're also trying to run a farm and a family and everything else in between.
And
that makes a ton of sense.
I didn't like it in the beginning, but as a business, and then like we wanted to scale, it was necessary. And I just had to come to terms with that and set boundaries for myself. And
and that's actually, I'm so excited that you just used the word scale, because literally that's on my short list of things to ask you about. So scaling the farm, because obviously when it's sort of a hobby at the very, very beginning, or if you're just asking, like you said at the beginning, you're just like, hey, how many chickens do you want? You know, and you could manage that in that way. But if you need to grow it as a business and get to a certain scale where you're making enough money to pay the bills and have it make sense and have it be a full-time enterprise, not without off-farm jobs, you need to build in efficiencies into your operations in order to raise and grow enough to sell and make that make sense. Did you make any mistakes on the scaling? Let's talk about that first, and then we'll flip it and talk about some of the successful things you've done to scale.
Yeah. So I think in the beginning, I wanted to please everybody. I was like, oh, she's got four kids. I need to make sure her chicken's like really big, or this person, they have a big family, so their chuck roast, I need to make sure is on the bigger side. I was trying to customize everybody's order. It was not sustainable. And I would get frustrated and resentful and like all those things. And I just had to let it go. And so at this point, our subscriptions are all Farmer's Choice and they're not customizable. The only thing we'll do is if you don't like spicy sausage, we will just do mild. Like we can do that. But everything else, I had someone that's like, I just want bacon and boneless chicken breast. And I'm like, I can't do that. So we have a great online store. Yeah. We order a la carte. That I think is going to serve you well. And I just got confident telling people that, because in the beginning, I tried to make the subscriptions fit everyone, and our subscriptions honestly not for everyone. So I just had to be okay with that.
That's a good point. I've actually heard more and more farms say that too, which you're not going to serve 100 out of 100 customers, and you shouldn't try to, because you'll be miserable doing so.
What I found when I was customizing, none of those people lasted. They would be on for like 3 or 4 months, and I would bend over backwards to make it work. And then they ended up saying, hey, this isn't working for me anyway. They were just not an ideal customer for the subscription.
Correct. And at the end of the day, sometimes the hardest ones to please aren't ones that can ever be pleased, right? And that's okay to let them go. They can go be somebody else's customer, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Most customers and buyers love their Farmer's Choice subscription. Let's go. How often do you do subscriptions? Because the subscriptions is something that you mentioned at the beginning as a game changer for your business. How often do you do those? What does that look like? And why is it such a big deal?
Yeah. So all of our sales, we used to do a little bit wholesale. Now we just do retail direct to consumer. Like that's it. We don't do any wholesale, anything like that. We do offer bulk, like half big and that kind of thing, but really just to families. It gives us peace of mind. So we noticed, like with the farmers markets in particular, after doing them for, we've been doing them 8 years at this point, there's literally no trends. It could be pouring down rain and we'd have a better sales day than like a beautiful sunny day. And we would have random really low days and random really high days. We kind of depend on that to be consistent. And so the subscriptions has been like the backbone really of the farm. Like it's probably a third of our sales that are guaranteed every month. I plan out the whole year in advance of what's going to be in them. And so it's just, it's something that is streamlined and it's easy and it's guaranteed. It brings us peace of mind and we can count on it. And so I would say any new farmer starting out, as soon as you can start subscription, start it. And don't worry about like, well, I'm scared, I won't have enough. Just start. People have so much grace. Just start. And then if you have to adjust and tweak or even cancel it for a couple months and restart it, people will be totally fine with that. We've had to make so many changes with our farms, just the way we sell or which farmers markets we're going to be at or whatever it is. And people, or even last year, we stepped back from farmers markets completely for like 9 months and our sales didn't go down. And so our customers just followed us with wherever we were going because we had built up that email list. We were clearly communicating, giving them a heads up on things. We had built that trust with them. So they were like, hey, wherever you go to sell, we'll make it happen. And so that's been, huge, realizing there's no one right or wrong way to do it.
Yeah. And I love that you said the customers will have grace, right? But I also think job well done in building trustful relationships with those customers, right? I think if there's a huge takeaway, I just took it was you said, I built up our customer list, your email list with customers, and they followed you. If you went to different farmers markets or if you pulled back and said, hey, we're just going to do pickup locations for 9 months, they followed you because, I mean, I just want to like pause and like think into that because I think there's farmers that are afraid to leave a farmers market or afraid to make a change like what you're saying. And you're saying, no, like you're going to have to make all the changes and you should because you don't want to get into a situation where you're fatigued, you're frustrated, you're bending over backwards, something's not working also for you as the farmer. But if you've built those customer relationships through regular email, especially, right, then they're connected to you, done. They will follow you if the pickup location change, if the farm market change, if you try door-to-door delivery, or if you have your stand on the side of the road. That's very powerful for you as a business owner to know that you have really loyal customers and can do what you need to do to have a successful business too.
Yeah, it's been huge knowing that it's okay to adapt and change as seasons change, as the farm changes, our family changes. It's okay to be flexible as long as you're clearly communicating and you're giving people they're going to want to support you with whatever you do.
That's amazing. That's awesome. And then back to sort of the scale question, it sounds like subscriptions made a big difference. Are there any other things that come to mind that worked well for your farm in terms of just scaling, getting the business bigger, but not overtaxing yourself on the work, like trying to be more efficient so that you could get bigger?
Yeah, I remember at one point just like making a list of everything that stressed me out and trying to address them one at a time. Obviously, you're not going to solve all your problems all at once, but because I remember I used to think I could do that. I just write them all down, solve them, like just get them done with, and it doesn't work that way. But I remember our pickup locations, we would sit there for an hour for people because I was like, oh, I thought I have to have this long range, you know, people are busy, I need to give people a long range of pickup time. And I realized that I didn't need to do that. So now I don't even do a range anymore. I say every Thursday at 5, we're going to deliver orders. Some people show up early, some people show up 15 minutes late. So we're there probably 20, 30 minutes still.
Yeah.
But it is so much nicer because
wow.
If you do an hour, people still show up early or they come after the hour. And so
yes,
it's being an hour and a half. We cut that and we just said a certain time for those pickups.
Nice.
So that was huge. And then just developing systems for things like keeping our freezer organized, having a system for that, putting time on the schedule after all of our subscriptions are packed and,
yep.
and out. The freezers are a disaster. And so just putting that on our schedule, like organize freezers for 2 hours every single month after subscriptions are out to keep everything organized and efficient. It makes packing orders the next time so much easier. Making notes of all the things that are stressful or overwhelming and figuring out you can take small actionable steps to get it to be less stressful and to get it working more efficiently. That takes time.
Yeah,
this is our 8th year and sometimes we still don't feel like we know what we're doing for some things, but we've grown a lot. When we look to where we were and where we are now, we're like, oh wow, we've come a long way. But then we're like, we still have a long way to go too. So you never stop learning.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You started on 1/2 acre. What does that look like now? You said you had at least 50 acres.
Yeah. So now we're on 50, 20 acres of field and 30 acres of woods. When we first started, we were not using all of it. But at this point, yeah, we're like, especially starting the cattle and we're just doing grass. We're realizing we're quickly running out of space. So we're probably going to have to find some more adjacent land, hopefully here soon to be able to keep growing the herd. The cows are our favorite. They're so low maintenance.
Oh,
all the other animals. They just need water and minerals and grass, and it's great.
That's amazing. You have started cows now. So, because you said you, yes, okay.
We got breeding stock 2 falls ago, but the cows weren't born until last May, and these cows took about 3 years to grow out.
Yep.
So, the end of next year, we should have our first beef available from
our. So exciting. So exciting. That's amazing. I love hearing it. And then you have little helpers too, right?
Yep.
Mason. Yeah. And then how old is Daisy?
Mason is 6 and Daisy is 2. So wow. Mason actually is helpful. He's helped build fence. He helps move chickens. He's helped like label stuff. He helps Joe with whatever. Sometimes he just hangs out with Joe and plays. And then when Joe gets to a point in a project where Mason can help, he'll bring him over to help. And then Daisy, she doesn't really help with a whole lot at this point. We just say she's our comedic relief.
Oh, I love just that. Laughing. It keeps it real, right?
Yeah, we'll have pigs get out or whatever is stressful that day. And then we'll just look at Daisy in her own little world, picking dandelions and blowing them, but they're blowing back on her face and she's trying to get them out of her mouth because they're like all to her tongue. And it makes you forget about all the stress. And you realize, okay, this is just light and momentary. This is stressful this day, but it's going to get better. Not
everything
like this.
Yeah, you have more important things to worry about, like getting dandelion seed out of your mouth. Yeah. I love that. I love that. I think comedic relief's got to be somewhere on the like good advice for farmers list for sure.
Yeah, whether it's a kid or just a friend that keeps you laughing, that just,
even your animals, I suspect, make you giggle. Hello.
Just sit in the field and watch the animals. And that is so relaxing and funny. Just watching the chickens run has always been funny for me.
Chickens are fabulous. Well, they all have so many personalities, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
It's great. Okay. So farming, scaling the business, you've learned a ton along the way. You mentioned the word, sort of the business side of farming at the very beginning of our call. So when you're thinking about scaling and being successful as a farmer, obviously you've been at it, like you said, now for 8 years. Was the business side of farming and what you were in charge of, because you are owning your own business, not just your own farm, it is also your own business. Was there anything surprising about that? Surprising, or any advice that you would have around the business side of farming?
Yeah, we definitely romanticized farming, and we thought it was just be like this beautiful, picturesque thing. Like, we get to raise the animals and sell it to our community. We did not realize how hard running a business was, and like knowing your numbers and knowing your costs and tracking everything. We did not do that well for the first probably 3 or 4 years. We did track everything for taxes and stuff, but we weren't breaking down how much of the percentage of the cost of the tractor goes to this enterprise and this one, and like, tracking our labor and that kind of thing. Like, once we started doing that and realizing the true cost of our products, we're like, holy moly, we need to raise our prices because we're actually making negative money. And so, I mean, that is a huge thing. If we could start over the farm again, we would have tracked everything religiously. We would have tracked our time. We would have met with other farmers that were down the road from us to learn from them. Like, Barn the Door has been amazing with that. Just the connect groups and the connect sessions, being able to ask farmers down the road from you practical questions. Because when you first start, unless you've taken a business course, it's really hard to learn. And I would suggest that if you have an opportunity to take a business course, that would be awesome, because we were not skilled in that area and we had to learn on the fly, which was stressful. We still do our own taxes. My husband enjoys it. I think he's crazy. But now that we like know how to track everything, it makes it simpler. But yeah, now we can look at everything and know our costs and know what profit margin we have and like where we need to make things more efficient or cut costs or raise our prices or whatever, and be confident in those numbers. Because in the beginning, we weren't confident in those numbers. We're like, we're charging the right price, but we're not really sure. Knowing your numbers from the beginning is a game changer. If I could say
I love that, because I'm actually technically supposed to ask advice for farmers in their first year of farming, and you just started to crack that already. So one of those was learn from other farmers. And you mentioned connect sessions, which you host, which is awesome. So in case anybody's listening and wants to know what the heck we're talking about, connect sessions are essentially office hours. Like Rachel, for example, is one of a number of farms that we work with that hosts office hours for other farmers. And so they can come into those office hours and ask a gazillion questions and get advice and shoot around ideas, learn from one another, et cetera. And I want to get back to that, because I'm sure you have some really interesting feedback on some trends you hear there. So if you don't have somebody down the road, which hopefully you do, right? Farmers, where can you find them? And in the case of if you work with Barn to Door, you can find them in office hours, which can be great, because you can also, hey, I'm in dairy, or I do microgreens, or I do produce. I can maybe talk to the same type of farmer, or to your point, down the road or at the farmer's market, like talk to other farmers and find them. And then the second one was track everything religiously. If somebody's just getting started doing that, how do they do that? I would think that would be overwhelming.
Yeah, it was. So we keep it simple. We tried the self-employed, I can't remember. There was something online that we tried. Google Sheets has been the best for us.
Yeah.
We can make it exactly what we need to. We can break it up by enterprise, break it up by tax. Yeah, for the Schedule F that we have to do being self-employed, everything's there. And I would just say, we actually had another farmer that was gracious enough to share her Excel sheets with us, so we could kind of like take it, make a copy of it for what we needed to be able to track everything. So we have everything broken up by enterprise and by month. And then we also have the overhead. That's all encompassing. So we look at what percentage of our revenue comes from chicken, pork, beef, and then we have the percentage, and we assign like the Barn to Door cost to like that percentage to each of the enterprises. So that cost is being covered. That's something that would easily be like, well, how do we cover that cost? Like, I don't know. I just didn't know how numbers worked, and I'm still not a numbers person. Joe, my husband, is much more skilled in that area, but just making sure that, all your costs is covered, like the tractor and the tractor repairs and the seed and all the things that like could be attributed over your whole farm, not just like one enterprise, and making sure it's broken up so all the costs are covered. Farmers are really generous with their knowledge. We reached out to some
amazing
people on Instagram and just said, hey, can I have your number? Can I call you for like 20 minutes while you're on the way to the butcher or whatever, just to pick your brain? Never been told no. Like, farmers, they love to share their knowledge and share their mistakes too. Like, I've noticed farmers are just really good at being vulnerable, I feel like, about what they did wrong and how you can learn from
yeah
them.
Yeah,
but
such good information, and you need to always be gathering that, right, to make good decisions. I appreciate that. And then this sounds like such a plug, it's not meant to be, but obviously Barn to Door, literally we build software for farmers to run their business. If you were talking to a newer farmer, what would you tell them early on, especially was the most useful parts of using something like Barn to Door to hopefully make business more efficient? What was the most helpful to you? Was it time savings? Was it tracking certain things?
For sure, time savings. And if I could go back and get Barn to Door from when we started, I 100% would do that, because building a website was part of the cost. And at that point, when we got on with Barn to Door, we already had our website built, but I took, gosh, I don't even know, probably like 30 hours trying to figure out how to build that. So it would have been a huge time saver.
Bless you.
So time savings, yeah. Yes. Inventory tracking, keeping track of that. And as you sell it, it's like real time, the inventory goes away. So inventory tracking was a huge, huge time saver. And also taking orders before Barn to Door, I think we may have had a few things on our Squarespace store, but I mean, I would still get so many calls. Well, how many wings come in a pack and how much does it weigh? And there was no variable weight with Squarespace. So that's what I love about Barn to Door. You can do the deposit and then you can do the final charge based on the actual weight of the product they receive. But I mean, I would probably would spend hours on the phone every week taking orders and explaining different cuts and how much comes in it. But with Barn to Door, everything's right there. You can say how many come in the pack, what the size range is, what the price per pound is. And then Barn to Door even gives you the estimated final cost. And then
so your customers get all the information.
Yes,
the customers. Yes.
It's like a
self-serve ordering. Yay!
Yes, it was amazing.
Big fan.
And y'all set up the whole thing for us. I just sent a spreadsheet of everything we had and the information, and y'all set it all up with your stock photos and the photos that actually look beautiful, because I think before I just had pictures of our frozen meat packages, which, I mean,
it's hard to make meat look pretty. It really is.
It is.
That's a theme. Just make sure you have good relationship with customers and they will buy your meat, even if it's ugly. It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. That's great. No, it's good. I mean, there's just, I think, any way that you can save time. It's interesting because you said you wrote a list of all the things that were stressful and then you slowly started to solve them. It's interesting because sometimes when I'm talking to farmers asking, hey, what can we build for you next? Because to your point, we obviously help farmers with an online store, like you said, a website and a store, and the ability to use a POS in person, et cetera. But we're thinking about farmers the whole time. And so when I'm talking to farmers, I'm like, okay, where do you spend a lot of time? And I don't mean I'm harvesting or working soil or something. I actually mean on the business side, where are you spending not just so much time, but repeat time? And to your point, if you're having to explain for hours every week on the phone, the same cuts of meat or the same description to customers over and over again, that's a red flag for inefficiency. And so then we take that and we're like, okay, how can we make that? That's why there's all the descriptions and the estimated weights and the everything else, because we're like, okay, that's a way that we can save farmers time, because farmers don't have extra time. And so then they can spend it on the things that are more important than repeating the things that you're like, why do I keep saying this? And now it's in my sleep and I'm dreaming this. And yeah. So anyway, red flag, if you're repeating the same thing over and over again, that could be solved in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So interesting. Fabulous. Okay. Let's talk about the future goals of your farm. Where are you headed?
Yeah. So this year we're planning to go back to one of our farmers markets, and to be able to do that well, I needed to hire help to help with our mobile farm store. Okay. So we're working on that. So we have hired people to help us. And when I say hire people, it's really just like friends that we either pay by meat or just do like an independent
contract. Lovely.
Never like,
I've heard that that works well.
It has worked well for us.
I mean, okay.
It can get sticky if like they don't do a good job, and then you have to be like, you have to have that hard conversation with a friend. But for us, the two ladies that are going to take over the mobile farm store for me, we know them and have a good relationship with them.
Wow.
So we have kind of trusted them to take that on so I can go back to the market, because I knew I couldn't do all of it. Yeah. So that's one thing. And we're also going to be harvesting our first lamb this year, and then the beef next year. And then another big thing, which I didn't talk about at all, was farm tours. So
okay.
Thing that we have love doing just to offer that transparency, because people are always like, well, how do you label your meat? And I'm like, well, we consider it pasture raised, but really we think a relationship with your farmer and actually setting foot on the farm goes above and beyond that. So we offer spring and fall farm tours just for our customers. It's very simple. They just walk the farm and they can ask questions. We see the animals, and we're really trying to grow that this year.
Yeah.
And also gear some more towards students, because we've had a lot of homeschool co-ops and stuff reach out to us wanting to bring their families out to the farm on a more educational level. So we're trying to look more into that and how we can just bring people out to the farm and educate and show them where their food comes from, and hopefully gain some more customers as well through that, just getting to know people. I think I read a statistic that said like 2% of people actually attend farmers markets.
Arguably even less. So to your point, get the word out. Yes.
If we can meet more people and get them on the farm and build that system and have our farm trailer there that they can buy from at the end if they want to, be able to try meat.
You just need to keep inserting yourself in person and online. I think sometimes word of mouth in person is really important, especially if you're really intentional about it. Like you said, farm tours is brilliant, or injecting yourself in different school events or different things like that. But you can insert yourself online too for word of mouth. And thinking about both of those separately, whether it's social media or newsletters, do you have any other advice for that?
I would say I'm not the strongest on social media. I'm really good at stories. So I'll just take random videos throughout the day at the farm, whatever, if I'm making food, and just share them through our stories. But as far as making posts and learning the algorithm and all that, I'm not great at that. but
what, you don't have spare time for that?
Nope. So I would say, yeah, that's something I don't have down to a system. I just honestly do it when I think about it. And it's something that I can easily fit into my day. I take the videos out there. Once the kids are in bed, I upload everything. It takes me 5 or 10
That's
minutes.
Amazing.
It creates conversations. People ask questions. They're like, oh, that's so cute. And then they're like, oh, my kid's that age. And they're like, oh, actually, I've been following your farm for 3 years. I still haven't tried your meat. This is where I live. So sometimes people follow you for years and they finally are ready to take the leap.
A lot of our farmers do email and social media. Not all of them do social media as heavily, but they definitely do email heavily, just in terms of making sure to maintain and be building that relationships. I don't know. Would you agree with that?
100%. Because whenever you post something on social media, only a very small percentage of your followers actually see it. But when you send an email, I think at this point, our open rate's like 50, 55%.
That's so it's like miraculous.
Yeah, that many people are actually seeing it. Whether they read the whole email or not, at least they're seeing our farm name and they're being reminded, oh yeah, I need to place my order.
Yeah. I think social media is a great echo to building the trust and the relationships, but the email is kind of cutting to the chase. And obviously in person, you can be gathering those emails too to keep building those relationships. It's really powerful.
Always have an email sign up. And then also with social media, I try and every so often point people to the email list. Like, hey, this is what I shared. This is the recipe I shared. This in our weekly newsletter. Like, click here if you want to join the email list.
That's a great idea. Use social media to point them back to the newsletter and the email list. Brilliant.
I love the MailChimp partnership with Barn to Door, how I can see each email generates a certain amount of income. I can see that anytime someone places an order, they get asked if they want to join the email list. And I just love that partnership. It's made it really easy for us to grow our email list.
That's awesome. We love it when you're growing your email list. Well, so do you, right? Okay, so now I have to recap because there were some really good points and I'm going to miss. Basically, somebody needs to listen to the whole podcast to get all the juicy ideas. But I wrote down a couple of your zingers. And then after I read them, I want you to think about if there's any last bits of advice for folks that are starting their farm, what advice you would give them that we maybe didn't get a chance to discuss today. One of them was, I love this. You start learning to sell and market items even before it becomes your own enterprise. The way you did with beef, you partnered with a farm, you figured out how to market it, and then you took on the enterprise and you already had that down, which was really powerful, I thought. And then I loved the adding enterprises slowly. You did that one kind of accidentally on purpose, which was poetic. You always take the things that come your way because you're always learning all the other things the hard way, right? But starting with chickens and then a couple of years later adding in pork and then a couple of years later adding in cows and just getting good at each one before moving on to the next. Brilliant. And then I loved the start marketing before you're selling. You were saying, hey, I don't have anything to sell, but I can sure start talking about the chicks and I can start building relationships and just keeping people informed. Super powerful. Subscriptions, you said. I don't always do a recap, but you had so many good ones, I couldn't help it, Rachel. Subscriptions, you said, that's your backbone. Like, that's just recurring sales. You said about 30% guaranteed sales, which is just brilliant and miraculous, right? And you said, do it as soon as you can. Just start right away.
Yep. It doesn't have to be perfect.
No. And I love that's another piece. Like, it doesn't have to be perfect. You can adjust and your customers will be gracious with you, which is amazing. And that's the other one, which is build up your email list, be emailing your customers, build that trust, and they will follow you even as you adjust your business, which is so great. And then I also loved, well, I'm going to use this one, by the way, make a list of the stressful things and then slowly tackle them one at a time. And it's just like you solve them in different ways. I think you said putting a time slot to organize your freezers. How brilliant is that? So all the good advice, all the good advice. And I'm sure you have so much more, but we have just a minute or two left. So what other bits of advice would you give before we put a pause on this podcast and we'll have to schedule another one?
The thing that comes to mind is just, again, the grace. Give yourself lots of grace. Like, you could have all the knowledge, you could read all the books, all the right people to learn from, do all the right things, and you still might not succeed in the way that you wanted to or the way you pictured it in your mind. But I think that's just part of the process. I was so hard on myself, and my husband, he deals with us too, losing animals here and there. Like, we can be so hard on ourselves, but I think we all do the best we can with what we're given, and that's enough. You learn from those times and you try and do better the next time. We all have to do that. We could do all the right things and still mess up, but that's just part of the process. So I had to get real comfortable failing and failing and failing, and then succeeding a little bit, and then failing, 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 and then succeeding. You know, you just have to learn to adjust and try new things and get out of your comfort zone if you want to really build something that is going to last for decades to come, which is what we're trying to do. We want this to be our lifetime career, and we would love our kids to take it over one day if they choose to do that. So we're trying to build something amazing, and like, that takes time and it takes hard work, and you've got to push yourself. And I don't like to do that. I like to be comfortable, and I like only committing to things that I know I'm capable of. But you'll surprise yourself. Sometimes I've been forced into those situations, and I really grow on accident because of just the circumstances. The farming is not cookie cutter. I think too, I was not confident. And so I tried to do what I saw other farmers doing, and it just never felt right, or it never worked well. And so I just had to take little nuggets from everybody and figure out what worked for us in our climate, in our farm, with our family, in our region. And that takes time, again, to just figure out what's going to serve your customer well. And then seasons change and you've got to change and you're flexible.
I appreciate that. Oh, wow. I'm going to like go back and look at the script of everything you just said, because it made me have like 20 more questions. Like, in a good way.
One thing that came to my mind too, taking advantage of opportunities. Obviously, once you start building your farm and you get a few years down the road, you're going to have so many people asking things of you, and there's going to be things that you need to say no to. But I think really considering, like, we had so many people that reached out and were just like, hey, so for instance, we had this lady that her husband was getting ready to deploy. They had just had their first child, and she had stepped away from teaching. And she's like, I have all the time in the world. I have a baby, so there's not much I can do. But if there is something I can do, can I just come volunteer my time and help you? I think initially I would be like, oh, like, I don't know. That's kind of weird. I don't know you. But I ended up saying yes. And like, she has become the biggest blessing and one of my best friends. And she weekly and helps us, and she just takes some meat and eggs, and she's just happy to be a part of what we're doing. Like, there's going to be so
many
that either want a homestead or maybe have their own farm one day, or just want healthy food, and they just want to be a part of what you're doing in a very small way. And just give those people the opportunities. Maybe it's just packaging eggs for you, maybe it's filling in for the farmer's market for you, or maybe it's helping butcher chickens, and just giving them an opportunity, get to know them. Okay, is this person not crazy? Okay, cool, then you can more opportunities. We've said yes to some of those things that felt crazy at the time, like, I'm inviting the stranger into my home to help package eggs and my kids. But they've ended up being big blessings, because those people really believed in what we're doing, and they could never do what we were doing. They were not in a position to do that. And so just being a part of what we were doing was a blessing for them, and it was a blessing for us. And yeah, it was weird and strange to do that, to say yes to random people just wanting to come help, but it ended up working out really well. And maybe one day we'll have a full-time employee that can do all the things. But right now it's a bunch of puzzle pieces that just kind of fit together, and we have lots of hands.
I love that. And you're just building community.
Yeah.
And to your point, people get to be part of something important. That feels good.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Oh, well, thank you so much for all of the great advice and your time. So much more to talk about always, but thank you for the time you did give today before we tap you on the shoulder again. But it's great to learn from you and what you've done and what's worked, and so many good ideas on scaling a business, growing a farm, being flexible, showing grace to yourself. I really love that one. That one we could talk about forever, I'm sure, but really appreciate your time today so much. I want to extend my thanks to Rachel for joining us on this week's podcast episode. You can check out more of Rachel and their farm on their Instagram handle. It's instagram.com/shinkfamilyfarm, right? And that's S-H-E-N-K, family farm, just FYI. At Barn to Door, we're humbled to support thousands of independent farmers across the country. We're delighted to offer services and tools to help farmers access more customers, increase sales, and save time for their business. If you're an independent farmer who's just getting started or transitioning to selling direct, or if you've been at a while and want to simplify your business management, please visit barntodoor.com/learnmore. What's great, because there's connect sessions with great farmers like Rachel, and you can ask her 1,000 more questions that are even more probably detailed and specific that you can take away for your farm. Thank you for tuning in today. We look forward to joining you next time on the Independent Farmer Podcast. Thank you for joining us on the Independent Farmer Podcast. At Barn to Door, we are passionate about empowering independent farmers to build a thriving business. To all the farmers out there, thank you for all you do to grow amazing food, care for the soil, and serve your local communities. You are the backbone of our country. For free farm resources or to listen to prior podcasts, go to barntodoor.com/resources. We hope you join us again and subscribe to the Independent Farmer Podcast wherever you stream your podcasts. Until next time.